Chat with Traders, episode 42.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
Hey there, what's up? I'm your host, Aaron Fifield, and thanks so much for listening to this week's episode number 42. What you're about to hear is an interview with Bert Mueller. He's a trader of futures and equities and has been involved with markets since around 2007, but he does things a little different to most. He's an algorithmic trader who harnesses the power of machine learning to discover and develop profitable trading strategies. This is an area that hasn't really been covered in previous episodes, except for the odd mention here and there. So it was really great to have Bert on the show to share some insight on machine learning and how it works in the realm of trading. Beyond this, you'll also hear Bert's views on diversification and how he thinks about risk management. Plus, one of the things I really respect about Bert, and that is his drive for continual progression, his attitude towards further education, and the way he approaches goal setting. Now, just before we roll into the interview, I'd like to ask you for a very small favor. Could you please leave a very brief review on the podcast in iTunes? It's a massive help. Reviews have a huge effect on how well this podcast ranks in iTunes. So obviously the better we rank, the more listeners we can reach. So if you'd like a quick and easy way to support this podcast, please go to chatwithtraders.com/iTunes and leave a brief review. It'll take you no more than 2 minutes, and like I mentioned in the past, your support is really appreciated. So please do this just while you're listening. That would be really cool. Okay, time for this week's interview. I'm your host, Aaron Fifield, and here is my guest for episode number 42, Bert Mueller. Bert, what's up, man? How you going?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Not too bad at all. So we spoke yesterday and you were pretty much running off next to no sleep. I hope you've had a chance to catch up.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, yeah, I'm not convinced.
Got the first snow today in Moscow. So looking okay. Out the window, the entire city is white. Real nice.
It's white, so it's snowing, is it?
Yeah.
All right, very cool. Yeah, we're just heading into summer here, so it's much the opposite. But yeah, well, anyway, Bert, it's really great to have you on for an interview today. So first of all, thank you. And secondly, I'm really intrigued by some of the topics we're going to cover. And I think most of those topics are probably going to stem from machine learning. So that in itself is something that hasn't really been spoken about in any of the previous episodes. So some listeners may already be familiar with the concept of machine learning, but I'm sure you're going to open the minds for many listeners as well and expose them to something completely new. So I think it's going to be really good.
I'm excited, man.
All right, cool. Well, let's do it. So let's start right from the very start, like we always do. So share with us, when did you first discover the markets and what was your real introduction to trading?
So I came into some money around 2007, 2008. I have a friend who's a financial advisor, and I talked to him and I was like, you know, what should I be doing? You know, what's the good way to go about this? And he's, you know, the classical American, you know, registered investment advisor. And he's like, look, you need like some stocks, you need some bonds, you know, that classic stuff they teach you in school. And so I went ahead and I bought some stock. And I think Ford was the first company that I bought because, you know, well, Ford's a good company. They have had a solid balance sheet and whatnot. Actually, I think it happened to be one of the companies that didn't get bailed out after all that. So I guess maybe the initial analysis on the fundamental level might have even been correct. But I bought it and it went down. And I bought some more and it went down some more. And then it kept on going down because that was the time. You know, we were in a bear market and everything was kind of going down. And, you know, I thought that this is kind of lame, you know. I'm a smart guy, or, you know, I thought I was a smart guy back then. And I, you know, I have this, you know, I have a buddy that helped me with my analysis. Our analyses coincided. They're in agreement, and the market obviously wasn't. So what's up? And so I kind of just started reading and reading, and I had a more technical background. I was studying biochemistry at the time, and you know, technical analysis appealed to me. You know, it seemed really easy to look at the stochastics or whatever they had, the RSI back then, and then you know, buy the bottoms and sell the tops. Obviously, in practice, it didn't turn out to be that easy. But I kept reading and reading and reading, and I actually ended up trading options because I was, you know, young and dumb and wanted to make $1 million overnight. Obviously, I lost. I even took some money because there were some other people who thought I was smart. Yeah, that was that turned out really, really, really bad. I lost all the money really fast, actually. Yeah, I was devastated because it wasn't my money, and you know, I had never made that much money in my life, and just, oh man, so bad. But you know, I don't know. I realized that someone on the other side of that had made that money, you know, and so I realized that you could be the guy making that money, and so basically I set out to do that, to be that guy, and I read basically everything I could get my hands on. You know, obviously what you're talking about, this yesterday, the Market Wizards book books were amazing. That's why it's awesome that you're doing this podcast. But I realized kind of that there's a very many different approaches to trading, and I realized that the approach that I was most comfortable with was this like more technical, mathematical, whatever, computer based approach. So that's kind of how I got started.
Okay, yeah, no, that's really good. So, I mean, let's just take it right back to the very start there, and you came into some money around 2007. I mean, why did you come with that money to the stock market? I mean, you could have, you know, gone and started a business with it. You could have, you know, done a bunch of other things with that money, but something appealed to you about the stock market. What was that?
I don't know. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I think just making money while doing nothing, you know, that's what I thought it was going to be like. You know, you put your money in the market and then just, you know, and a year later you look and there's more money. But obviously it doesn't work like that.
So let's talk more about your first kind of first year or first 2 years while you were trading. So you told us about the Ford example there where you just kept buying and it kept going down and you bought again. After that happened and you started to read up on technical analysis, what did the next like year or two look like for you? How'd you go?
I did have some good trades using like just, you know, silly technical analysis like RSI and, you know, whatever, stochastics, that kind of stuff. And that was actually super bad. Actually, I know a lot of traders on your podcast and a lot of traders I know as well. That hand trade, they kind of say like the worst kind of trades are the ones that are like wrong in principle, but they turn out well, and then you think you did them right, and you get that overconfidence in the wrong kind of technique. And so I did end up making some money trading this stuff, and then I was like, huh, I want to make more money. Basically, I just wanted to get more levered. So I did the long options.
Okay, so if we had to summarize those first few years, what were probably the greatest challenges and frustrations? Like maybe, perhaps that was, you know, just taking on too much leverage, like you mentioned there. But was there anything else?
It's too much risk and being undereducated, and I think being overconfident. I was, you know, really young back then. I'm not, you know, not much older, not much younger than I am now, but still, in terms of training experience, just, I mean, night and day. I think it's just, you know, undereducated, over leveraged. And I mean, you really have to understand that like making, let's say 20% a year consistently, I mean, you're going to make as much money as you want, basically. I mean, shit, making 15% a year, you can make as much money as you want. you know, if you start young enough.
Sure. Okay. So you also mentioned right at the beginning there how you read a bunch of books. You know, Market Wizards was obviously the highlight, but you also read a ton of other trading books. So you did a lot of reading. What did you discover from this, and was it a helpful exercise?
So, it was definitely a helpful exercise. I would say, you know, the 99% of the stuff out there is total BS, in the sense that it's not going to help you. Even the stuff that's good, you know, for example, you know, maybe like out of the hand trading stuff, the stuff I've seen work personally, you know, kind of maybe let's say is support and resistance, right? But even the people that talk about just straight up horizontal support and resistance in their books, they're going to use the examples that are only the ones like the best examples. And so, again, that's kind of detrimental to the learning process. You need to really understand. You need to see the times that your technique fails. And you need to really understand those, I think, a lot more than the times that it works. Because when it works, well, it works. You don't have to do anything. But it's, you know, it's still worth it to read let's say a bad book, or, you know, there's no such thing as a bad book, but a book that doesn't help you in the classical sense. It doesn't give you useful information, because you can see what other people are doing and you get ideas. Maybe, oh, maybe I should do the opposite of that. Or maybe I should, that's a thing I just never thought about. Like, you know, this guy trades, you know, let's say commodity spreads using like the lunar cycle. I'm like, wow, that sounds ridiculous, but I've never thought of trading commodity spreads, you know?
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a really good point you bring up there. So, I mean, what you're kind of referring to there is, what's sort of known as the well-chosen example is that seeing those examples and then also seeing them actually fail and not work out so well as how they did in the books and in the examples. Is that what led you into more of a quantitative direction? Like, what made you move on that path?
Yeah, there's just no there's no framework, you know. I mean, maybe there would have been a framework if I had like written down like six patterns, right? And then, you know, went through all the price charts by hand and looked at them. But which six patterns would I have picked? You know, what if I picked the wrong six patterns? And I realized it's like in business. I came to it from kind of a business approach. You know, you want something where there are higher barriers to entry because there's less people in the market at that point. For example, the reason I choose to trade intraday but not HFT is because I can take advantage of HFT liquidity but not compete with HFT players. So it's kind of the same over there. If I had more math skills, less people are kind of doing that because, you know, I guess it's a little harder, but it's not. So they're just tricking you with the symbols.
Sure. Okay. So that's probably actually something we should cover before we go too much further. What is your background like educational-wise? Could you just run us through that briefly?
Okay. So in undergrad, I triple majored in biochemistry, molecular biology, business economics, and global studies. Then I went on to do a master's in bioinformatics. And now I'm doing a master's in computer science with the specialization in artificial intelligence and machine learning. But I really like to study. So for anyone out there, you know, Coursera, you know, edX, all those websites, they're super awesome. And I actually took my first machine learning class on Coursera because I didn't think, you know, it's kind of low risk. You know, you can just drop the class wherever you want and it's free. And, you know, it actually ended up being like, you know, probably 50 times easier than I thought it would be.
Sure. So that was actually going to be my next question. Ask you, like, where did you even get started once you sort of started to move in that quantitative direction? Was machine learning the first thing you kind of stumbled across? Because, I mean, there's probably easier things you could have picked up still on the quant side of things before you got into machine learning.
I think computer science in general, it's a little bit easier than like straight, you know, straight math. Like, you know, there's this example, you know, there's this thing called, I mean, I don't know if you know about integration. There's differentiation and integration in calculus, right? And so integration, let's say, is you find the area under a line, you know, between the x-axis and some line, for example. Or if you have a circle, you find the area of the circle. And, you know, to derive that equation to find the area of a circle, you know, it's pretty complicated, I would say. But then I stumbled upon this thing called Monte Carlo integration, where basically you just kind of put the circle in a box and you already know the area of the box, and you throw darts at the box and you see the proportion of darts that land in the circle versus the box, you know, and you can figure out the area that way. And I thought that was so beautiful and easy and kind of stupid. And wow, why would you ever do so much math to get to this simple solution? Because, you know, you don't need in trading, you know, precision to the, you know, 50th decimal place. You just need, you know, approximate precision, which means you don't really need closed form solutions, you know, if they're even available, like the ones provided by, you know, classic math or whatnot.
Yeah, okay. All right. Now, that's really interesting. So let's drill down now into more of the specifics about how you trade and how you've been trading in the, you know, the past couple of years. So run us through your actual style of trading and how you approach the market.
Okay, so I use machine learning. I try to use kind of evolutionary computation stuff like genetic programming, grammatical evolution, because I like to read the system after it's generated to make sure it's not doing anything crazy. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with stuff like neural network and regression techniques, because you're ending up with a set of coefficients which don't really tell you that much. I try to be in the market. I trade intraday. I'm in cash by Friday, and I would say 90% of my portfolio is in cash by the close of each day. Trade only limit orders. I try to be in the market the least amount of time, you know, to avoid those Six Sigma, those Black Swan events. I trade futures and equities. Try to keep my risk balanced, and, you know, risk is the most important thing. So, for example, you know, trade, you know, short only the index futures and long only Apple. It's not a pairs trade, right? They're not trading at the same time, but on average, the risk is reduced.
Okay, and that's a good summary. So, I'm really keen to go deeper into what you just mentioned there. So, let's start with, for someone who may be totally unfamiliar with machine learning, how would you even describe this to them? So let's take it right back to the basics.
So I guess machine learning is symbolic regression, right? And so regression, I think, you know, people are more or less familiar with. You have, you know, some points and you fit a line to them, right? What line best describes this set of points, right? So you can call that, like, you know, baby machine learning. what I do is the same thing, except you, instead of using, you know, coefficients and a line, you kind of start with the 0 point origin. You have nothing, and you use, you know, functions, and you have a whole kind of a program written out. So it's a program that writes programs, basically. That's the type of machine learning that I use specifically.
Okay, and I don't know if this is going to be relevant or whether or not it might be helpful, but are you able to perhaps give us an example of machine learning and other technology that we might use in our everyday lives?
I mean, yeah, it's a little different, but yeah, all the time. Obviously, Google, they use machine learning, and like for Siri or whatnot. When you do the search, they use machine learning to kind of, depending on, let's say, your geography and the language you're speaking, to start searching in the places that are most likely to give you the right answer, like the answer closest to what you're looking for, like your page rank and whatnot. Or obviously self-driving cars, right? They use machine learning to distinguish between the, you know, objects and the people and the road and whatnot.
Okay. So let's bring this back to trading now. How do you actually use machine learning to discover and create effective trading strategies?
Okay. So, you know, first of all, something that not a lot of people know, but or I believe, I don't know, but there are edges that persist, you know, for 30 years. You know, I don't re-optimize any of my trading systems. I just pick the, you know, and best out of, you know, a ton and trade them. So I have systems. Like, I won't trade anything that hasn't worked, you know, for all the data that I have, basically, unless there's some serious structural issues with the data, you know, like before some point. Like some people will recommend, don't trade, you know, before or don't use data before 2003 for into trading because forget is it the before it was like quarters and now it's decimals or whatnot. But you know, I don't do that.
So what's your actual process like? Like, let's say you wanted to create a new strategy tomorrow. Where would be your starting point, and then what would be the steps before you go to live trading?
Yeah, so I look at my I look at my portfolio, right, and I see, you know, what I'm trading, and let's say I'm trading, you know, already I'm trading the E-minis, right? So I already have exposure, whether I'm also to check if it's long or short. Let's say I'm long short already the E-minis, right? So I would then say that I should probably pick a market outside of the U.S. index market. In fact, outside of the equities market. So I would then go to the next most liquid market because that's very important to me. That would be the, you know, FX market. So I would probably pick the euro in that case. I would download the data for the euro, you know, and put it in machine learning software. And yeah, and run the machine learning that will output a set of systems based on my objective function, you know, predefined criteria. And I validate those systems using, you know, cross validation at a sample. For example, I like, you know, I check the currency systems on all the other currencies. They don't have to work, but it's a lot better for them to work. And there's stuff that works definitely on the intraday time frame with sharps above 1.5 on every single currency with like less than 5 parameters. So that's definitely possible. And I think once you really figure out, you have to understand what, first of all, what is the maximum profit the market could give you? And second of all, you know, what are the systems that you can build around that? If that makes sense.
Yeah. So just to zoom in a little bit on what you said there, you download the data, right? And then you put it into your, I don't know if it's the right word, but your software that, you know, operates, does the machine learning aspect of things. What's actually going on there? Like, what's it doing when it's reading through all this data? What's the purpose of that?
So basically, it does something like, let's randomly generate 10,000 systems, right? No assumptions at all. Just randomly generate 10,000 systems. Maybe it'll say, you know, when the moving average of the volume of yesterday is above, you know, I don't really use indicators. I mostly focus on price pattern, seasonality type stuff. But basically, it generates 10,000, let's say, of these systems, picks the top, you know, let's say 1,000, they mate, you know, which is their characteristics get kind of mixed, their rules get kind of intermixed, and they create 10,000 more. And that goes on for a while, and then you have some sort of set, optimal set of trading systems at the end, and they get rated based on a objective function that I set, which is like the goal. So maybe sharp ratio or drawdown or number of trades. And I'm a lot more worried about robustness than performance because, you know, like you can take 10 kind of decently performing, you know, systems and you put them together and you have an amazing one as long as they're not trying to capture the exact same effect, right?
Okay. So for the program to compute the, you know, as you used an example, there are 10,000 different systems or strategies. How does it come up with those 10,000? Are they if you put like five different rules in there or five different parameters, and then it's just kind of throwing out every variation of that, or how does that work?
It has a set of like indicators, let's call them, could be like the high of yesterday or, a moving average. It has the price series, it has a volume, it has, you have to understand also the content of the stuff you're giving it, right? If, price can definitely predict future price, but like, for example, if you can predict weather better than everybody else, you can really trade, the ag futures really well. There's like information that's outside of price that it's nice to incorporate. For example, Twitter sentiment, if you're trading stocks, spreads, if you're trading commodities, like calendar spreads, the different months. There's a lot of stuff. Again, a lot of seasonality out there, and a lot of highs and lows between various time points in the day are important.
Okay. So let's talk about the benefits of using machine learning instead of a more commonly used technique, such as actually writing a strategy, backtesting it, and then optimizing it. Like, what's the benefits of going down the machine learning path?
Okay, so let's start with I'm gonna make a comment about the fact that a lot of people say like machine learning doesn't work or whatnot, and I just have a very simple kind of a couple sentences that I know mathematically proves them wrong. Let's say, and if you do it the right way, that is. So this assumes you're starting with a zero point origin. So theoretically, basically, let's say we have a function space, right? And this space includes all viable trading strategies in the world, right? Everything possible. It's infinite in size, right? Now, obviously, some people are trading and some people are trading money and making money. Unless you believe basically it's all random and some people just make money sometimes and then lose it and then it's all, But obviously, that's not true. I don't know. I'm not really sure how seeing some people's results you can believe that. But anyway, so there are viable strategies in this space. Now, like let's say grammatical evolution from a zero point origin, you can, if giving it operators like plus, minus, divide and multiply, there is actually mathematical proof saying that you can create any function using just those four those four operators. So basically, if you search long enough, you will be able to create any and every single possible trade function or trading program that there is, and those automatically include some that work because there are people that are doing this. So I think that's really important. And it doesn't apply to all types of machine learning. It applies to the ones where you have enough operators and you're working from a zero point origin. And yeah, you do. It can take forever to find a viable trading system. Because for example, I don't use just plus minus divide and multiply because that would it takes too long. And I do have a 40 core a Xeon server to process all this stuff.
Okay, so what are the key differences then between, finding a strategy using machine learning and then actually defining the opposite to that would be defining a strategy, so writing some parameters and then backtesting that on data and then optimizing it from there. So how does machine learning differ from that approach?
So there's something called like the data-driven model of development and the model-driven development, right? And when you come in, for example, let's say you're doing trend following and you want to use, maybe you just want to use one moving average, and that's your model. You have the moving average model. You say when it's above this moving average, you go long. When it's below, you go short. Maybe you want to use a crossover. You say when the fast one's above the slow one, then you go long and vice versa. You make a ton of assumptions, like maybe that market is mean reverting. Maybe that market on that time frame is mean reverting. Maybe, maybe the indicators that you're using, outside of the moving average, allow for you to only find mean reverting systems in the market. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff you don't know and a ton of bias you introduce by coming in with a model that you have, that you know of. Versus, for example, maybe, you know, I mean, I've seen some of my systems do stuff that a human could just never figure out, because you have to be looking at different times in different time series at the same time. So, like, for example, let's say the yen was up 3 days in a row and you have a low today in the E-mini that that is the lowest low in 2 months, let's say buy a tick above that low and sell at the end of the day or something like that. It would be very hard for, you know, for a human to kind of, you have to look at the yen in the past 3 days, and at the same time, you have to look at the E-mini today, but you're looking at 10-minute bars, and no computer can even show you 3 days, you know, of 10-minute bars, let's say, in terms, because the price here is just too long. So you're not even going to be able to, you know, visualize the pattern unless you got like three or four monitors. And even then.
Okay, so this is probably a good point to ask this question here. So once you discover a strategy that has an edge, kind of like what you were just explaining there, and it's, you know, to you it's worth trading, a strategy like what you've just described, it might not necessarily make sense to you logically, like in your head, you might not understand the reasons why that would work, but it does. So are you just purely looking for statistical edges only, and you don't really matter about why it works?
Well, I mean, yeah, right. It gives me more confidence when I can make sense of it or whatnot. You know, I'm probably not gonna. One of my friends just sent me a funny that he works at a big bank, and they were just like, "Oh, you see this dragon pattern?" And they drew a whole dragon on the chart. You know, I'm like, okay, if it breaks the dragon jaw, then you know we're going down. And so that kind of stuff sounds a little bit ridiculous to me. Probably, not gonna trade that kind of stuff. But look, man, there's so much stuff we don't know. Like, we're pretty dumb, you know, as a whole general population. And like, for example, the first cavemen, they didn't know where fire came from, right? But that would be really dumb not to use fire, because you know you could do a lot with that. Just because you don't know why something happens doesn't mean it's not viable. A. And B, there's, you know, a famous example that when, you know, people try to tell me, they're like, well, what about this? You know, there's this correlation or something like the Bangladeshi butter prices. It's a famous one. Could explain with like a couple or like one or two other factors, like all the variance in the S&P between like certain years. But it was a pretty long period of time. And they're like, well, that's obviously, you know, spurious and it's BS, and why would you ever trade that? And my thing is, hey, man, if you traded that for 10 years at 20% and you just turned it off at a 20% drawdown or whatever your way to turn it off was, who cares? You could have made so much money. And we're in this business to make money, not to be correct and not to explain how or why the market works. If you want to do that, go be an economist. You know, I mean, that's it. We're in this business to make money.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I like how you summed that up. So while you're using machine learning to find strategies, once these algorithms are actually live trading, do they continue to evolve with machine learning also?
No. So that's the thing. My output, which is another specific, I would say, to the way I do machine learning. My systems are actually like relatively simple. Like that system that I told you is actually not that complicated. It has maybe one or two free variables, you know?
And when you say free variables, what's that refer to?
Like things you're optimizing, you know, I mean, I wouldn't call like, a day high is just a day high. There's no number you can optimize there. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just the high of the day. You can't, you know, but in a moving average, it could be, you know, 21 bars, 22 bars, 23 bars, 19 bars. What's the difference between all that stuff, you know? So I try to stay away from that kind of stuff and more kind of discrete, you know. You have the day high is always the day high. There's no way to kind of, you know, optimize around it.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So What level of interaction do you have with your algorithms once they're actually operating and live trading? Like, is there any discretion when you decide to either run them and then don't run them? Like, could you shine some light on this for us?
So I try to start running them maybe when they're in a drawdown, but that doesn't always work. Obviously, I have the luxury of doing that when you're like already running many algorithms, you know. I've been doing this thing recently that's been amazing, actually, and it's kind of so I make I make slight, you know, economic bets on you know, from my knowledge of fundamentals or whatnot, or my guess on fundamentals. But for example, from trading by hand before, I saw the divergence, you know, between like the advance decline line and the S&P, and I was like, and also I know that, you know, we've been easing and easing and easing and you can't go any lower, and it's kind of like, you know, 30% a year in the market, that's kind of unreal. That's not like, that doesn't happen, especially for, you know, for this long. So I kind of turned off a little bit, not turned off, but lowered the allocation, lowered the risk to my long only systems, and left my short only systems, you know, the way that they are, on the indices only, and that's, you know, been really awesome. But then if you look back, I would just be, let's say, so my results were like a, you know, a 4 sharp over the past, you know, 6 months, and if I hadn't done that, it would be like, you know, 3.2. So it's not a big difference, but you know, I just, it's boring when you have, you know, when you have your systems and you have your framework, it's, you know, you just kind of run it and you're like, you know, what are you going to do? Sit all day? You just start, you're trying to tinker. I mean, you shouldn't tinker, right? And I don't tinker in a way where it can affect me, because, for example, if I make a bet and I'm wrong, right, I have a system that's worked for 30 years, right? So it's going to be still working more or less in the same way it's worked before. If I'm right, I get a little bit alpha in the near term, you know? Basically, it's like a lot easier to predict the equity curves, you know, out of 10,000 systems that have been working amazingly over the past 30 years than it is from 10,000 stocks. So there you go.
So what type of trader is machine learning probably best suited to? Like, for someone who currently isn't exploring this angle of trading, is there anyone who should maybe consider this, someone who you think would be a good fit, like a certain type of trader it would be relevant to?
Humans, you know. I think like the people that I know that trade by hand well, they're like super self-aware and they spend a lot of time on like themselves to make sure that, like, you know, like they're the machine and they're, you know, well-oiled and working well. And that's not the way that like humans are. It's that's why trading is so hard. So I think it's suitable for everybody. And the beautiful thing is, I didn't know, to be honest, look, when I started doing this, this is the way I looked at it. I was like, I'm going to learn all this machine learning stuff, right? And if I completely fail at trading, which is possible because, you know, I mean, it's hard, I can go and work at like Google or something. So I think it's a really good, you know, there's a lot of good you could do in general in the world with machine learning technologies and artificial intelligence. And, you know, there's never going to be a lack of jobs and you're always doing cool projects. So if you ever, you know, give up on trading, you could always do that. Although, you know, again, just work a little bit longer. It's just right there, you know. It's definitely possible, you know. Yeah.
So you mentioned just there artificial intelligence, and I don't want to go into this too much more, but is artificial intelligence essentially the same thing as machine learning, or is there are there differences between the two?
So, I mean, they're different. Like in academia, they're different. You can, you know, you can call machine learning kind of a subset of, you know, general artificial intelligence. Machine learning is a bit more about, you know, having a lot of data and, you know, kind of learning from that like massive amount of data, versus artificial intelligence has a little bit more, you know, kind of heuristic stuff, for example, or not solutions that aren't based on randomness in any way, for example. So it's a little bit more general.
Okay, cool. So share with us your thoughts on diversification, because I think that from when we've spoken in the past, you've spoken about how you can diversify in various ways and how you'd like to do this. And the various ways being that you can either do it for greater returns, and then on the other hand, you can also do it for protecting risk. So could you just speak on this a little bit and your thoughts on diversification?
First of all, yeah, obviously you should always diversify to protect risk. That should be your number one goal all the time. But I'm diversified, for example, across asset classes, across the side of the market, right, long or short, or I'm starting to do some pairs trading stuff even. I diversified across time frames, and basically every time I have extra capital, whatever that is, let's say $50,000 per contract, I mean, it depends on your contract size, I'd like to pick up a new market. I would much rather add a new market than allocate more to an existing market. I don't allocate more because, you know, again, you don't know what's gonna happen, right, in the future, regardless of how smart you are and you know, how good your systems are. You know, you can still have, like, we had the flash crash, or like last year we had, that was already last year, right? The franc just poof, 30% intraday. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, that's like a world currency. They're not supposed to have 30% moves. I mean, when I was reading I read a lot of the trend following books, and they recommend, for example, volatility based position sizing, and they're just like, yeah, well, you know, if the bonds move more than 2% in a day, like, you're not worried about your portfolio, you're worried about, like, the world ending. And is that true? I mean, you go, the franc moved 30% in like a second. I mean, it was, you know, like 5 minutes, but still, that's a lot. You know, that's a world economy. Diversification across as many aspects of the market, of the kind of trading space as possible. You know, I use a little bit more advanced math techniques like PCA on my equity curves. You have to. So a lot of people try to diversify on assets, but, you know, a trading system is essentially something, it's a filter that transforms your price series, right, into the return series for your system. So you're not actually now you're trading the original time series, the original asset, but really you're investing in the equity curve of your system, which is not the same thing as the asset anymore, you know, it's transformed. And you have to understand that.
Okay, and while we're on the subject of risk, just to add to that a little bit, when we were speaking the other day, you mentioned global risk metrics. So would you be able to maybe shed a little bit of light on that? Like, what are you referring to when you talk about global risk metrics?
The thing I was talking about, the 80 line divergence, VIX making new highs, the spread between the front and the two front month VIX contracts, that kind of stuff. You know, the spreads in between different expirations of different futures contracts, the volatility surfaces of various options and stuff. There's a lot of predictive, you know, there's a lot of predictive stuff out there in terms of risk, you know, when people are, I mean, for example, volume drying up, you know, if you have that's it makes, you know, you can see that that's not good. You can see that something, you know, bad is going to happen.
Okay, so say volatility is increasing on the VIX. How does that tie back into your individual strategies? Like, let's say you're trading in an equities market.
Well, if you're really creative and you can make it work, you can create a position sizing function that, for example, you know, scales the inverse of the volatility or the inverse of the VIX. So, like, the higher the VIX, the lower you invest. for example. Or you could be simple, like before when I was just doing, let's say, you know, kind of long-term index trading, you can say, I don't know, let's say the VIX closes above 35 2 days in a row or something like that, then you exit. But, you know, when you're doing that kind of stuff, you're a little bit more prone to overfitting. But you just have to be aware. And because there's a lot of stuff, for example, the VIX also defines market regimes, right? So there's clearly, you have to examine your performance, the performance of your systems or your own performance based on, you know, the market characteristics. You know, I believe there's many, many, many different market regimes. You know, could be like, you know, VIX is above 30, and it was an up day on the S&P, or VIX is between 15 and 20, and, you know, that it was a down day in the yen or something like that. And I mean, basically there's infinite variations of those, but, I like to have my systems, like, there's not that much inefficiency, or there's a lot of inefficiency in the market, but it's not as consistent as you would think. Like, you can't get, like, you know, 10 trades a day on one inefficiency unless you're, I mean, you can, but it's more you're getting in the realm of HFT stuff. But I like to trade for one system, let's say once or maybe once per a week or once per 2 weeks, and you get that over 30 years. You combine that with 20 other systems that have different edges, and that's a lot more robust, because if one of the edges kind of goes away, you can always turn that system off.
Absolutely. Okay. So stepping away from your own trading a little bit and just kind of talking about the broader market, as machines become more and more prominent in trading, the way you see it, is there any downside to this, or do you maybe see this as a positive thing?
I think it's a positive thing because we're incorporating more information, more predictions, predictors. I mean, if you're doing it right, again, I said it's very important to understand. You know, you have to add stuff that really predicts. I mean, not predicts, but helps. You know, price by itself, you can make a system using just price. But you know, again, if you had some weather or some sentiment or, you know, some other or some intermarket stuff, it always helps. You're making markets more efficient. You know, I think also humans will always have their place, kind of regardless of the amount of. Computer trading, because computers are still dumb, and they can find the good patterns, but, you know, humans rely too much on computers, I think, in that sense. You saw it, for example, and stuff happens, like, I think it was, when was it, in the past couple of years, Knight Capital Group, they just, you know, they opened, the market opened, and they just sent a bunch of, like, not correct orders into the market, and they, you know, what is it, like an 80% drop in their market cap in one day? And it's like, you know, wow, it's a good company. But, yeah, relied too much on the computers, didn't do their checks, didn't do their risk management, their verification and their testing, and lost a lot of money.
Yeah, that's pretty savage. So for someone who is so deeply involved in the programmatic side of trading, how important is this going to become over the next 10 to 20 years for all traders? Like, do you think that those without any programming knowledge will be disadvantaged in any way, or does it not matter?
Definitely not. Look, I mean, if you're doing scalping, yeah, 100%. You will definitely be disadvantaged because there you're relying on speed and whatnot. But there will always be time frames, generally a little bit higher than the ones that are, you know, worked on by the robots, where humans will excel. There's, you know, because we have pretty complex neural networks in our heads, and complex in the sense that they could fit a lot of nonlinear patterns. There's a lot of stuff that we process and goes on in the background of our minds that, you know, we can't formulate and we can't put on paper.
Okay, cool. So I understand that you keep in close contact with a number of traders, just moving on to a slightly different topic here, but you keep in close contact with a number of traders. Could you share with us how this has been beneficial to your trading by just having other traders in your circle that you can, I don't know, like maybe bounce ideas off and that type of thing?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I've been super fortunate. I actually, and quite randomly, met a group of people about, like, you know, a year and a half ago. And my performance has, like, tripled since then. And purely because some of these guys do HFT, and they were like, this is the performance that we can get. And you can kind of extrapolate, you know, if, like, if this is the kind of performance you can get intraday and this is the kind of performance you could get HFT, right, then basically in between is what you can get, trading intraday but not HFT. And, I mean, that's just an example. And so I started building systems kind of with the hope of finding these kind of results, and it's been very fruitful. But in general, again, it's like reading the books. Actually, this group of people, most of them trade by hand. So we don't really discuss so much. I mean, they know about systems and they know how it works, but a lot of the time they'll say, oh, we do this and this. And I'm like, huh. Using this indicator, like I can't use your method, but this indicator that you use to help in your trading, that's a source of information. That's a source of extra information not contained in the price or the volume, of the market. I should try to incorporate that, and I throw it in the machine learning. I'll go and boom, wow, there you go. And obviously, I share with them, hey guys, these are sources of info that I use, that could add a little bit more predictability to the market. And in general, you know, just having people to talk to, because this is a pretty solitary business. You know, it's sitting in front of a computer programming, prices going up and down, emotions, all that. You're kind of just inside yourself. And you know, I'm actually super okay with doing that. I think that it would be very hard to be a trader, like for anybody, unless you have a certain level of comfort with yourself and with being alone. But it's very useful, a lot more useful than I thought it would be to talk to other people.
Yeah, that's really well said. I like how you summed that up. So we briefly touched on this a little bit earlier. We kind of talked about your learning and that type of thing, but I really want to get your attitude and your views on constant learning, because this is something that's very important to you. So could you share with us, like, how you view that type of need to continually progress?
Yeah, I mean, I love school, both because it's super interesting. You know, look, for example, you know, you can go on a date, and if you could go on another date, and if you're good at it, you pretty much, I mean, it's sad, but you develop this template, and you're saying the same shit over and over again, and then you're bored. Okay, you go on a date, you get to the end of the night, you do your thing, and it all repeats, but there is so much new and interesting stuff in the world. I mean, like, they just made an artificial heart out of foam, they've figured out how to, control mice by implanting a optical fiber into their brains. They just found the Higgs boson in physics, and they're doing stuff in space. I mean, literally, there's infinity super cool new stuff out there. And, not only that, it really, like, I run several other businesses outside of trading, and to read a book about how to do something, go out and do it in the world, and get reward for that, I mean, that is just beautiful. Like, you're turning knowledge into money, into your enjoyment, into freedom, basically. The more knowledge you have, the more freedom you have. It's a really beautiful thing in my mind.
Yeah, man, absolutely, 100%. So I get the feeling that a lot of what you actually learn and what you read about is not necessarily directly trading related. I mean, is that often the case? And if it is, could you perhaps give us an example of something you've been studying or learning about recently?
Absolutely, because there's patterns that exist in the world that are just, they transcend any single discipline, I mean, maybe, like, think about the tree structure, right? The structure of a tree, right? We have the actual tree, right? There's different versions of the tree, as in, there's a little flower, there's a big tree, there's a whole nice array of that structure. But wait, then we have the veins in our body, and in fact, the veins in any body. Then we have the neural system. It's also a tree-like structure. there's these structures that exist in the cracks in the earth, like in the seismology and geology. You know, there's the structure also exists in an organizational sense, you know, and in a computer science sense as well. There's tree structures that are efficient for doing certain operations. There's like, you know, the, you know, kind of centralized structure like our universe, our solar system, you know, a communist country, you know, a variety of things. We have the, you know, the more distributed structure like the the way the ants, you know, live and find food and operate. That's a distributed commuting structure, which is similar to that. I mean, and you realize that, like, there's like kind of, you know, people always ask, is trend following always going to work? Yeah, of course, trends are always going to exist. Are you saying, is this system always going to work? Probably not. But are trends always going to happen? Absolutely. And you realize kind of, you know, there are underlying patterns to it all. Yeah. You know, even human development has a certain pattern, you know, for whatever reason. And I mean, it's just interesting to see this stuff and to realize and to know that it exists. And if you can capitalize on it, I mean, it's awesome.
It's even better.
Yeah.
So let's, I don't want to put you on the spot here too much, but what are your goals or your plans for the next like 5 to 10 years moving forward? What type of things are you going to be focusing more on? Like, are you going to be introducing new algos and strategies to your portfolio, raising capital for your fund? Like what's your outlook for the next 5, 10 years? What are you focusing on?
Well, my goal is to make $1 billion actually. And, that's, so I could start a fund for kids from, you know, all over the world so they could go to school for free in the States and the UK, you know, to get these kids from, let's say, emerging markets into good Western schools, because, the only way you're going to be able to solve kind of, you know, whatever problem there is, you know, from poverty to, you know, some sort of like religious wars going on, and, you know, like this ISIS stuff, for example, going on, is to educate kids at, you know, at a young age appropriately, and not in your doctrine, but just, I mean, with like math and science, like, you know, so because like someone that's a mathematician or a scientist, they're going to be exposed to some of these patterns automatically that I'm talking about, and you kind of like, it's much harder to believe in some of the BS that people tell you when you're like, look, this is something provable, repeatable, and I know the system, and the system works. And this is just, you're telling me that, you know, if I kill this person, then, you know, then the community will love me, because then, you know, I'm going to go to heaven and be, you know, a god or something like that. That's crazy. You know, and it's better to just, you know, when everyone is happy and nice and everybody is prosperous, that's better for everybody, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Those are some big goals, man. So props to you for thinking big. I like it.
Yeah, you gotta set the big goals. You know, every year up until and even today, I always set goals that I think are, you know, just out of reach, just impossible. You know, when I first came to school, I was like, I'm going to do a double major in chemistry and business. And people were like, you're insane, a double major with a hard science. And I was like, you know, I ended up doing obviously much more than that. Like, you know, right now I'm running, you know, 6 businesses, getting a master's, and I'm actually doing an IPO right now. So it's just, you know, it's possible. Everything is possible. You could always do more. You could always push yourself harder. And, like, you know, yeah, it's stressful and it's hard. But, like, dude, be thankful you're not, like, an African kid that was born addicted to heroin and has to, like, shoot their brother in a war, you know? Like, and just have fun with it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the key thing. I mean, like, you're obviously really busy. You've got a lot going on, but you are clearly passionate about it, you enjoy what you're doing, so it's almost not like you're not even working because you're enjoying it. So I mean,
absolutely, you
know, yeah. So, but let's bring this to a close. I just want to ask you one last thing, and that's for anyone listening, if they're interested in getting into, you know, this machine learning side of things and, you know, going deeper into algo trading, what are some great resources that they could begin with?
I would say, you know, you need a base of just general knowledge, general math and stats knowledge. And actually, out of all the stuff I've read, other than the Market Wizards book, like general, like a class on just statistics, it's much more useful than like stats for trading, you know, or whatever, some books like that. So I would really recommend these like MOOC things like Coursera or edX. They have such a wealth of super high quality information from awesome professors that do this for free. So they're sitting like they spent their time, you know, to create this awesome material so that people could learn for free. And I'm sure, you know, everyone's had professors that are just like, you know, in college, for example, they're there because they want to do the research. They're not there to teach. These guys are, you know, they're there to teach. They love it. They love to teach. And you can see that comes through the materials. It's very nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've done one course on the Coursera website and, very keen to dig into a few more as well. Really cool site. So yeah, guys, definitely check it out. What is it? It's Coursera.org, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that's Coursera.org, but I'll link to it in the show notes anyway. So guys, a full recap on this episode, including any of the resources that Bert has mentioned, as well as a bunch more, can be found at chatwiththetraders.com/42. So, Bert, just before you go, do you want to share with listeners where they can go to connect with you?
I can give you my email, and then you can post it out there. They can email me, or I'm on LinkedIn. You know, you can find me.
Okay. And you're also on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I don't really post any original info because I don't have too much time, but I repost stuff I like. I started doing it so I could actually go back and read articles that I liked, but it turned into I post some cool stuff. I mean, I post, obviously. I only repost stuff that I think is cool, so it makes sense that I think that's interesting.
That's a good idea, actually. I mean, I end up just saving everything to my bookmarks bar at the top of my browser, and it's an absolute mess. But, I like that. That's a good idea. So what is your Twitter handle, just in case someone wants to check out some of these articles?
I think it's BMOULER.
Okay.
Like cool. My last name.
Very cool. All right. And of course, that'll be in the show notes. So, Bert, thank you very much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. It's been very interesting and, you know, exposed us to something we haven't had the chance to speak about on the podcast before. So, yeah, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having an awesome podcast. You know, this is a very, you know, I would say right next to the Market Wizards book. In terms of actually helping people to trade, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear, man. Thank you very much. So take care, Bert, and let's talk very soon.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.